Welcome to Customize and Tune Office 365 Data Loss Prevention. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. My name is Jack Cabat. I'm a lead program manager in Office 365 focusing on DLP, and I'll be presenting with Wesley Hawley, who's on my team. And he focuses on the classification engine, our built-in types, so he's really the expert in this area. And from a feature perspective, and owns this capability where our engine is embedded across the different services and client endpoints. So today's session is a little bit of a deep dive in terms of how do we tune and create custom sensitive types to target specific entities and detections. And there's really, we're going to walk through a spectrum of capabilities of how to do that, kind of from easy to more advanced and more, that'll give you more power of what you can do. So just out of curiosity, how many of you had a chance, are familiar with our Office 365 DLP offering? All right, that's great, because we're going to dive right into capabilities, and we're not going to spend too much time around some of the other things that we do in terms of detections. However, I am going to start on this screen specifically to talk about all the IW experiences that we deliver as part of our offering. I'm assuming, given the number of hands I've seen go up, most of you are aware of the rich client experiences that we offer across mobile, web, and desktop in terms of reaching the end users. You know, and this is really one of our differentiators and one of the things we really believe is important from a DLP offering to actually engage the users and make those users be part of the solution. I do want to ask one more thing is, how many of you have actually attempted to create custom types in our solution? All right, just a few. So that's good. And this is a great session for you guys then to see. So, you know, given the fact that we have so much end user surface, that's another reason why in our solution, it's super important to ensure that you tune your content and look exactly for what you should be looking for. Because every time you don't, you're actually surfacing those as false positive to your end users, and you're lowering their value and trust in what they're seeing. You know, you've probably seen this slide a couple times on a number of sessions here, and it's really around the volume and complexity of data that's increasing at an incredible rate. And that's another key reason why it's so important to be able to, with this increasing volume of information, be able to target the right content so that you can identify that and apply the right protection policy. Clearly, in an organization, a vast amount of your content is one that's probably not subject to data loss prevention. It's probably content that is less valuable. But being able to zero in and attach yourself to the content that's required and then provide the right policies is super important, especially as the amount of data grows in the organization. All right, so I think we all understand why this is important. And now looking at a little bit across the various capabilities of how can you customize sensitive types. And this is really a spectrum of a set of tools we have available, kind of from, you know, simple yet powerful to more complex, yet also very much giving you the full control of what you match. So, you know, there's counts and confidence settings. How many of you guys are familiar with confidence in our confidence setting in our DLP offering? All right, not very many. That's too bad, because it's a very powerful feature, and it's a little bit our fault in terms of us not making that be more visible in the product. We'll go over that in detail. So keyword and groupings adjustments, it's an interesting new concept that we're actually going to be releasing soon in terms of being able to provide and create more sophisticated DLP detections through groupings of items. And then adjustment of built-in types. That's probably where a lot of the feedback we have in customer engagements in terms of being able to take something like our existing types, even something like a credit card, that in our system, you know, has the ability to match credit cards, but also looks for some corroborative evidence as part of its match. A lot of our customers say, no, I want to catch all credit card looking things, even if some of our corroborative evidence is not around it. That would be a great example of customizing and adjusting our built-in type, where you can still get the full power of the algorithms matching the credit cards, applying the checksums, but you just simply remove the corroborative evidence given the needs you have. And obviously creating your own types is probably the most extreme capability, but very much still one that a lot of organizations need. Clearly, you know, our set of global identifiers only is that, global identifiers. And as you move into certain areas, being able to capture account IDs, employee information, being able even to tune some of the HIPAA policies requires you to do some of that custom work. All right, so we're gonna quickly go into a demo. This is actually gonna be a lot of demos and not that many slides, so hopefully that will be good for you guys to get a sense of what we have going on. All right, switching machines. All right, so what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna act as a compliance officer or an IT admin who's actually tuning parts of this organization. And what I've done is created a policy, and as part of that policy, I have turned on alerting. So basically, alerts will be destined to me when that policy is hit, and part of that is I'm doing that as I'm tuning the policy. So here's an example email that I have received as part of the alerting system, you know, basically saying that sensitive content detection has occurred and a violation to the policy. So I'll go ahead and investigate. And that brings us right into the Security and Compliance Center and right into the details of the item. But you know what? I've actually decided, let me try a different one first, which is a little simpler to walk through. So the same alert email, but just for a different document, a different instance. Again, we click on the investigate, brings us right into the details of the item. And this is actually a new view that we've created specifically to help with some of the tuning requests and being able to provide more information of how to view the data. So as part of this, you can see there's information about, you know, the title, who did it come from, what was the workload. This was actually in SharePoint. Bonnie was sharing something with Alfred at Gmail. You know, we can see a consolidated view of all the policies that were hit, in this case just one. We can see the sensitive types detected, in this case was SSN. There was only one found of confidence 85. And then if we scroll lower, we can actually start to see the real number that was detected and a little bit of text which gives the context of where this was found. This is a new capability in terms of being able to put this all information together. We've had reporting for a while, but being able to put all the rules, all the classifications, including the sensitive data, right into our alerting story is a capability a lot of you have been asking us for. Now, clearly looking at this, we have one number, SSN. The document says W-2 doc. Looking at a little bit of this content, it's easy to see this is a W-2 form. So from my perspective, in my organization, that seems like a relatively low risk item that I don't really want to do much about. Maybe I'll just audit those numbers. So a very simple thing to do is to go into your DLP dashboard, click one of the policies, which is PCI data. That's the one that was referenced. Go ahead and edit this. And we're going to go right into the advanced settings. And you can see that, you know, there's a low count rule. And we can easily adjust this to be higher than one. And we're going to say, you know what? Three is kind of what I'm going to start worrying about from even detection and just eliminate just noise. And you can see that there's actually multiple rules here. This one is called the low count, and it's doing 13. And I would save this, and then from this on, a simple UI change will eliminate the low counts. I can go in and look at the other rule, which is actually looking at higher counts, and that is specifically set up for you to have a very simple way to differentiate that higher risk items purely by count can have a different response, a more constraining set of actions, such as remediations versus just, let's say, auditing. All right, so that was a very simple thing with count. Let's go ahead and go back to our email here, and we're gonna take team travel one, and go ahead and investigate again. Again, the same process, we go ahead and click on this. Now, this is a little bit different because here, I'm actually testing this myself, and I'm sending some form of some information to in the system to see how the system is behaving and detecting. So in this, you know, so we have the same user information up top. And again, here we see we actually hit multiple policies. You know, we found 10 credit cards, 10 SSNs. And if we scroll down, we start seeing again all instances of these with similar context. But given that I'm testing this, I noticed one thing. I was testing SSNs, and in my test corpus, I had both formatted and unformatted numbers. But here, all I see is formatted SSNs. So that doesn't look right. So unfortunately, right now, you have to go to TechNet and actually look for a document that describes all of our sensitive types. This is actually a great reference material which has each one of our types and describes them in detail. So here, if I scroll down, eventually this is just the menu of where to get to. We have a lot of built-in types. We'll go to SSN. And for each of the types we have built in, you have this level of information that's showing you what the format is, what the various patterns we're looking for. Is there a checksum on the number? Obviously, checksum things have a way higher confidence and lower false positives. And then the next section is the interesting one, where you start seeing that there is multiple confidence levels. So what are confidence levels? You can think of those as groupings where, especially in more loosely defined types, you will have different levels of how confident we are that it's the real thing. Some, you know, I've heard some customers talk about this as narrow or wide detections. And what that means is you're going to catch more in the wide or lower confidence ones, but some of those will actually be false positives, so you have to deal more with that. But clearly here, I can read this and see, you know what? If I modify my confidence to 75, I'm going to start looking for unformatted SSN. And I can see, you know, that it's also looking for a keyword SSN, and it has to have at least one of the following, a date and an address. And I can scroll down further and actually even see what are the specific keywords that it's looking for. So how many of you have been aware that this content exists to have real access to what we're looking for? All right, very few. So this is just simple on TechNet content that describes each one of our built-in types. So now that I know that all I need is 75 confidence, I can go back into my policy and modify the confidence level. So in here, I'm going to go again to policy settings, go to advanced rule level, and then edit this. And just like last time we were modifying counts, in this case, we're going to go ahead and modify the confidence to be at least 75. And you would do that across all the types that would make sense. We were looking specifically at SSN, and we'd have to check the other ones. So that's, again, a very simple thing where you get to leverage the things we have built in to more accurately target the data that's important to you. All right, so those are kind of the simple things that we have available out of the UI for you to configure. Now let's look at a little bit more interesting example. So we're going to go create a new policy quickly, the medical HIPAA, and this is a new capability we're adding. We're going to go next, and let me go to advanced to see the actual rule. So in here we have the HIPAA rule, and this is a new HIPAA capabilities that we're actually enhancing our detections. Now, one of the things we've added is this notion of groupings. And you start seeing the capability of this, and this is all UI-driven, where you can basically create compound types, where what I have done is created a type that basically looks for one of US SSN or custom name and something else that has any of these three capabilities. Obviously, you can go ahead and easily modify this to add some other type from any of our built-in types or something else you've imported yourself. So for example, we'll add the ITIN in here. And now we're looking any of those. And then you have obviously logical operators between these groupings, you know, any of these, all of these. But again, this is a very powerful way of creating compound types that can provide better matching, especially in the more loosely defined environments where you don't have checksums and just regexes to go on. And this is a new capability that's being launched as part of our HIPAA improvements, but it is a capability that's available to other types as well. All right, so that's it for the quick demo I had. Go back slides. And I'm actually going to invite Wes in to take him through the next set of customizations that looks at the deeper end of the pool in terms of creating custom types and tuning those as well.
All right, thanks, Jack. Can you guys hear me in the back? Mic check. Everyone's still awake? No one's playing Pokemon Go in here? We're all paying attention? All right. I saw one guilty face. Two right here. Okay. So Jack just showed us some really cool stuff. How many of you guys learned something new just a second ago? Saw a lot of hands, people that knew kind of what we do, didn't know a lot about it. So I hope you're learning some new things. We're about to jump right on into the deep end of the pool. So I hope you guys are doing all right here. A minute ago, Jack showed us this powerful capability of grouping custom or sensitive information types, configuring the counts, confidences, etc. And that gives us a level of control to match what we want, right? But you'll notice that I'm only looking for a couple sensitive information types here. This is our out-of-box HIPAA template. You know, we're starting with social security number and with common names. But there's some additional stuff that my organization uses that I want to protect. For example, we use medical record numbers. Now, those are organization specific. They're different for every medical provider. So I'm going to need to build my own. So to do that, we're going to create a custom sensitive information type. Now, when we do this, let's first stop and talk about some of the common principles of doing this. And we'll ask ourselves a few questions just to get us started, and then we'll jump right on in. The first thing we need to ask ourselves is, what are we matching? In this instance, we're going to do a medical record number, which is going to be pattern-based. This is an 8-to-9-digit number somewhere in there. Sake of simplicity, we don't have a whole lot of formatting in here, but there may be some special digits or different things in this number. The other thing we need to ask ourselves is there specific formatting to our number? Does this number have a checksum that allows us to validate that this is an actual medical record number? Well, let's suppose that we create our pattern, we do all those things. There's a lot of 8-to-9-digit numbers out there in the world, right? Social Security is one of them. And given enough 9-digit numbers, you could have a really strongly formatted number, you could have a checksum, all kinds of things on there. You're still going to get some numbers that are going to pass these. So let's look for some additional evidence to increase our confidence that when we find something, we've actually found a medical record number. And the way we're going to do that is by looking at some of the context where we found this number to begin with. We're going to look at the keywords around it. We're going to look at content on both sides of this number. And we're just looking for additional clues that increase our confidence that what we found is what we thought we did. Now, how far away from this number we look is kind of important. If you find the word medical record number on page 1 of a document and the number itself is on page 10, probably not related. What we have found and what experience has shown us is that relevance is directly tied to proximity to the actual number. The closer something is, the more likely they are to be, or the more likely they are to be related. And we call that the proximity window. Inside of that proximity window, that's where we're going to look for our different evidence. We control, as we create our own custom sensitive information type here, we control the size of that proximity window, as well as the kinds of things that we're looking for inside of that proximity window to increase our confidence. Now, when we define our sensitive information type, that's done in XML. So we need some objects in our XML to map back to these principles. The first is the actual number itself. In the XML, we'll call that an ID match. And all of the supporting evidence, corroborative evidence, we're going to go ahead and call those match objects. How many of you guys are familiar, comfortable with XML? Okay, that's a pretty fair number. So we're going to dive right into actually creating our custom sensitive information type. And let's see if I can hit the right number here. Excellent. So we're going to jump right into Visual Studio. And what you're looking at here is a template for what we call a rule pack. This is just a grouping of your sensitive types. It's an upload, a wrapper for your sensitive types when you upload them. We have some metadata here that we're going to add. For example, the publisher name. I work at Contoso Corporation. I'm going to add my publisher name, so when I create custom information types, I can create custom versions of the types we've built in, like social security number you saw a minute ago, and differentiate them in our software because, or in our UX, because I can see that Contoso Corp shows up from this metadata that we're providing. Now, rather than sit here while I type all of this out, I'm just going to quickly replace some of this text. So I've filled this in nicely. You can see Contoso Corp, here's the name of my rule pack, and just some information about it that I can look at later to remind myself what's in here. Oh, let's hope my battery holds out there. Now, we've added some detail about the rule pack itself, but now we need to go define our actual sensitive information type. There are two parts to that. The first is where we actually define our requirements, and that's this upper section here. The second is the part that will show to you in the UX when you're creating your policies, the part that shows up when we detect these information types in the customer's data, and it shows up in those policy tips, and that's the localized strings. So we need to define both of those things. And here we've got a filled-in version of a very simple first iteration of our medical record number. So let's walk through some of the key pieces of this medical record number. First, there's a unique identifier that's used throughout the system. It also ties together some pieces of the XML. You'll notice that's the same number. So we know that these are the localized strings for this definition. You can see we've named it. It's a medical record number. If your location is in an English-speaking country, if you're in Slovakia, for example, this, which I won't attempt to say, is what will show up in your UX, and you can add all kinds of languages to this. And we've also got our definition. Jumping back to the actual requirements of our medical record number, here's where we start defining things that we just talked about. Here's our pattern proximity. This is the size of our proximity window. We're going to look for evidence within 300 characters on either side of our number. And we're going to get to this in just a second. A minute ago, Jack talked about confidence level. And he showed you an example of the social security number, where there's certain patterns in there with different varying levels of confidence that come with them. And you may have noticed that the requirements of those were different. So if we find SSN with a very strongly formatted number there, it's very obviously an SSN. That comes with higher confidence. You might find something that's just a regular 9-digit number with no keywords, and that would obviously come with much lower confidence. Well, the way that we can do that in our own sensitive type, create different versions there, is in these pattern objects. So we're just going to group our requirements in what's called a pattern. And each pattern, we're going to define a confidence level. Now, when you select a sensitive type in the UX, you're by default going to get the confidence level that we define here. You can tune that. This just provides you a default value. So I've only got one pattern here, so it's going to be that same confidence level of 75%. Now inside, you'll notice some other familiar things that we just covered. The first is the ID match. This is the pattern itself. This is our actual medical record number, and we're finding that using a regular expression, which we're going to define in just a second. And we also have our other evidence. We're looking for some keywords specific to the MRN, and other keywords which are more for various records. But we might call, in our organization, we might call our medical record just a record number or something akin to that. So we've got some generic record keyword terms. Now, one of the things that I can do is use these any blocks. And the any says, I'm going to look for at least, the min-match one, at least one of these two things inside, either a keyword from the MRN list or the keyword from the records. So let's actually define our keyword lists themselves. Oops. So we need first our regex, which we've created here, and I've just inserted a standard regular expression with some character buffers on either side. And then we've got our keyword lists. Might be cutting out on me. So the first is our generic records keywords. And you can see I've got just a list of words that you would expect to be used around record numbers. Record number, record no dot. The standard kinds of things that you would expect to see. And we can add to this, we can change these over time as we tune. Then I've got our MRN keyword list here. And there's a few key differences between these keyword lists that I've added just to show you. The first is, you'll notice that some of these keywords are really similar, record no and record no dot. That's because I'm using what's called a match style. And here, this is a word-breaking match style. So in languages that use spaces, like English, we look for these words separated by word boundaries on either side. But one thing that I can do is use a string match style, which looks for just a substring. So rather than have to type out a second version of this keyword, I don't know what I just did. There we go. With a period there. Instead, what I can do is just use the match style string. And even if there's a period, this was a substring of the other string. So we'll catch them both. You can use this capability to find prefixes, words that are used in conjunction with other compound terms, et cetera. So let's go ahead and upload our sensitive type here. And so that's going to upload. And what we're going to do now is tune the sensitive type. So again, just by raise of hands, how many have actually done this before, created a custom sensitive type, deployed it, tried to see the results, and tune it? A couple hands. OK. It's a little bit of a lengthy process. You've got to get your sensitive type out there. You have to create a policy. You have to wait for content to apply to that policy, and then dig through the reports and things to see what actually matched. One of the rich capabilities and conveniences, frankly, that we're bringing here is the ability for you to tune right on the fly. You don't need to deploy. You don't need to wait for content to be crawled. You can just test right up front. So we're going to come in here and upload just a couple files to test with. So I've gone across my organization, and I've found a few documents that look like they might be related to my medical record number. I'm just going to see that I'm matching what I expect to match. And these are pretty small, so that we should get results quickly. Excellent. And I'll notice here that in record 2016.docx, I found a couple things. First, I found a medical record number. And I can see the number here. I can also see the keyword that corroborated it, that led us to match. And if I dig down into this, I can see the actual text where this number matched. So I can see the number itself, and then I can see that corroborative evidence record and number right here. So that's pretty neat. And that looked right, that I was expecting to match that one. And I can dig down into some of these others, do the same thing. Record number, here's my number. This is looking right. I also found an SSN, which is pretty cool. Let's check out this last document. And we find that something's interesting. This doesn't actually look like a medical record number. We have the right terms. This number happens to match. It fits our pattern. And we have the right terms here, record number. However, this is an example of a false positive. We shouldn't actually match this. So we first look and notice that some of our true positives actually were called just record number. So it's not necessarily an issue with our term. It's the fact that other non-MRNs are using these same things. So we look for something unique in these. And I start looking at some of these other examples. And these look like they're IT tickets. And I notice that some of them have the word ticket tracker in them. And if I dig down to the others, I'll find something very similar. So what we're going to need to do is come back to our definition here. And we're going to make some changes to exclude these false positives without impacting the true positives that we've been matching and seeing those good results. So the first thing that we're going to do is come up here, and inside of our existing definition, we're going to add another block of requirements. And it looks just like this one, where we're looking for keywords. In fact, we're requiring at least one keyword from two lists to be there. Except this time, we're saying, I want to find precisely no matches from this keyword list of MRN exclusion terms, okay? Now we need to go add our exclusion terms as well. So we'll come down here and add them. Perfect. And we've added ticket tracker and ticket, and we can continue to add other terms as we happen to find them. But these were just some of the obvious ones from the example that we saw. So now we're going to save this and come back here and we're going to change that rule pack. And while that is uploading, we'll come back here to our tuning experience. We'll click done, and I'll it's kept my previous ones, so those should still be should be cached there. I won't need to re-upload. And let's reclassify. And I'm seeing my results. I still see results from records 2016, but these look like the true positives, so we're still matching those, which is great. These all look good so far. I still see the SSN, but now in that document that had our IT tickets, I no longer see those false positives, which is exactly what we wanted to see. So let me jump back over here to our slides. And let's recap for just a second some of the methods that we just used in these detections. So as you go out and create your own custom types, you can remember what we did here. There's also a bunch of additional capability that we didn't talk about. But let's walk down through some of the things that we just did. So we've used our regular expressions. We looked for additional evidence around those expressions, around those patterns. And we controlled how far we actually wanted to look around those things. You can use internal functions. We have a bunch of built-in things that compute checksums, that look for some of our common types of information around the world. This is useful if you want to modify our built-in version of SSN, for example. We used dictionaries in Jack's demo. You could see some of those medical terms that were included in that HIPAA template. You can do unique matching. You can do M of N, where you're looking for five of one, four of another, for example. There's all kinds of unique capabilities here, but there's a bunch of other types of detections that we didn't talk about. So everything we showed you here was based on a pattern, and that's something that you can find inside of a document. There's also sensitive types to help you detect documents themselves that say something about what content actually is. One example of those is a fingerprint, and that's largely used for templatized data. So if you have a form or some kind of document that you use over and over again in your organization, you may change it each time, we'll detect the original form as well as variations of that form, and they can change pretty significantly without jeopardizing our ability to detect them. But here, these are some of the capabilities that we have used in our organization. I'll have to skip back or past this for sake of time. And as you go out and do this same thing, you've arrived at this point where our sensitive type is now tuned fully. We've used a bunch of these tools. Now you want to think about how to actually tune that as you deploy that across your organization. What do you do once you've arrived at your final sensitive type? And I'll turn that back over to Jack to walk through that final step.
All right, thanks, Wes. All right, so we've talked a lot about creating your own custom types, and obviously tuning is very close to creating custom types because it's almost like a spectrum in terms of being able to create custom types, but also be able to tune existing types may actually mean you're doing some creation, very much like Wes was doing, where he was modifying parts of this. So to help you with this, we have actually included a number of features that we're obfuscated so well that most of you will not know we have them to actually help us be able to do that. So for example, we have a very simple configuration to do a what-if analysis, where you actually create your policies, click a single setting, and then the content will actually be logged, and the actions are logged as if they were executed, but nothing's actually applied from a blocking or interference perspective. And that is a very key capability to be able to basically allow, you know, being able to know what impact you will have without actually impacting any users. We also have signals from our end users where you can actually have end users communicate in all the various IW experiences that this is a false positive. You will actually see those signals back in our reporting capabilities to let you know that you're hitting false positives and maybe you should act on that. We already used the test classification document matching technique that Wes showed, and I've also used alerting in the as in my first example. So let's just do a very quick demo. I think we have maybe 3 minutes for one. All right, switch to our machine. We're back in our dashboard for DLP. And there's a couple of things. One is we can quickly look at one of the policies. And under the status, there's a setting called enabled. And you can easily edit this. And this is where you can actually modify the fact that we're going to do audit only. So this notion of right now the policy is turned on and it's acting, we can go ahead and test it out. And there's actually two modes. Testing out means we're just going to log it. Or test it out with notifications means we will notify the users but still not enforce any of the blocking actions. So it's really a progression to allow you to first test it out, collect the data, turn this on for a couple weeks in your organization, see what you're capturing, and you'll probably be surprised of what you're capturing, even for some of the well-built-in types, you know, the ones that have a lot of checksums and other capabilities. And then you can switch on to show policy tips, where you actually start teaching the users that there's changes coming, that certain types potentially will be protected, and they need to be ready for those changes as part of their business processes. That's a very simple setting that can go a long way in terms of helping you discover sensitive types and the data flowing in your organization. The other quick look I'm going to do is take a look at one of our reporting capabilities. And here's just the built-in report for false positives and overrides. And what it shows you is for, you know, various policies, you can actually trigger and see, you know, I can see from the red line that there's been a bunch of policy overrides. Click on that, and these actually see, well, there's one person, Jack, who's been doing a lot of overrides, and for both credit cards and U.S. Social Security numbers. And you can actually dig into this and see what text they would have put in all the way in Outlook, and in this case, this is Exchange, so it would be Outlook or OWA, for them to actually do this. And if you keep scrolling through these, you'll see, well, vendor communication. There's another one here, vendor communication. Well, that may signal we have a process in place that's maybe perhaps a little broken in terms of, or the user's not educated that for vendor communication, perhaps they should be using encrypted emails or some other forms versus sending this content unprotected. So again, very quick, looking at some tools available to us as part of this. All right. So we're pretty much out of time. So just go quickly to our summary that really lists what we've been covering today, that there's really a spectrum of capabilities in terms of how you configure sensitive types. And some of these are very much UX driven versus some of those require XML configuration. But hopefully, listening to Wes's walk through this, this task won't be as daunting as perhaps it first appears in being able to take full control and do either create your own types or modify existing ones as part of it. Anyway, this is a wrap up for us. We're going to have a few minutes for questions. So if you have questions, please let us know. And I think we have some actually giveaways as well to entice you to come up and speak up to the mics, please, for questions. Thank you. Any questions? Go ahead, sir.
Can we apply the DLP policy in SharePoint when the user is uploading the document?
So we're not in the real upload, real-time upload pipeline. We actually run afterwards. Yeah. And there's various reasons why that is true, things like co-op and other experiences would be degraded because of it. So we run in the background and we'll actually correct things and change permissions as after we've finished. So the documents uploaded, we will run after that period.
Okay. Because one of the issue which we are experiencing, because DLP rely on the search crawling, right?
Yes.
So what happened, because we are in the tenants, if search service is running low on the resources, the document is not getting crawled for, you know, extended, like, you know, 4 or 5 hours. So the information, it's exposed, even though it has, sure, you know, the confidential information.
Yeah, so we understand that problem, and we're working to remove and close that latency. Our goal is to be within minutes, okay, reliably within minutes, and not have as much variability as we have on index today. It is not something we're ready to announce of what the fixes or changes will be, but it is something that we're aware of and want to close that gap to provide you that kind of functionality.
Thank you. And one last question. This classification where we can create the custom types, is it available in all the tenants or it's in the...
That's a great question. So in the previous session, we had a little bit of a roadmap slide that talked about availability. Today, this functionality for custom classifications is available in the old Exchange style capabilities, but we are getting ready to start a preview of this where this will be available in the Security and Compliance console across all the workloads.
Okay,
that preview we hope to start momentarily. It's hopefully within the first few weeks of October. And if you can contact me and Wes, we're happy to add customers to that. It's actually a preview where you can sign up your tenant, you will get access to some of these features early, and you can interact with us and provide feedback as part of it.
You know, we have two tenants, dev tenants and the production tenants,
yep,
so we can safely roll it in.
Exactly.
So yeah, I will send out anyone. Yep. Thank you, thanks a lot.
Right, thank you.
Let's take one from over here.
Okay, two questions. The first is, from a notification standpoint, is the ability gonna be in there that we can actually turn off the email notifications to where we don't get those, that a compliance administrator doesn't have to worry about getting in the inbox, they can actually go out?
Correct, and that's
online,
fully configurable. That's only appearing there because I have a policy that has an alert as one of the actions.
But well, when you're creating the policies, today at least, when you go to set an action, it requires you to send a notification. Are we gonna be able to turn that part off?
That should not be required. So are we talking about admin or end user notifications?
Both.
So admin notifications are definitely controlled through its own flag. And if there is an issue you're having, then we should talk about that as potential bug that's in the system.
Okay. And then the second one, are you guys going to provide some sort of custom like RBAC roles just for reporting? I know that you have compliance administrator and all that, but is there a specific role that we could give to folks, say, okay, here, for you to actually go out and be able to review those reports online?
So all of our reports are part of based on commandlets, which means you can actually customize the RBAC roles through creating custom RBAC roles and add the commandlet permissions as part of it.
Okay.
That one's not though. If you can't give someone a report without giving them access to everything in DLP, I looked at it, there's no way to do it.
So we should talk offline afterwards, because there should be a way to actually configure the RBAC role where only specific commandlets are available to that you can run, because the reports are backed by PowerShell commandlets as part of its execution.
Yeah, I looked at it and it's...
Yep, so happy to chat afterwards.
So my question is, can you integrate with external data sources for your word list, for example, or your different types of scenarios? What's your story there?
Yeah, you can use them. We actually require you to import them into our service. You could obviously set up a systematic way of doing that where you're pulling from a source and pushing it in on some interval, but yes, you can.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. I'll actually give some of these away. I've been holding them.
Yes, hey, sir.
So will there be a roadmap to get the reporting to be able to go into something like Power BI so we can have an executive dashboard for DLP reporting?
So there are a bunch of new reporting capabilities that we didn't actually have time to show you today. Some of those are coming. I'd refer you to the timetable that was in Jack's previous session, and you can see some of those details there. If you have specific questions, feel free to reach out to us.
Yeah, right. And there isn't a specific item about Power BI, but what we do have is all the DLP events are now being fed through Activity Feed API. I don't know how many of you guys are familiar, but Management Activity Feed API is an audit stream that's coming out of Office 365. DLP events are included as part of it. There is no easy connector to put that into Power BI, but you can capture those events and put them into Power BI yourself.
Okay, and then a second question. For like the XML modifications you demoed, will there be a library that sort of show us some examples for various things? As we discussed, you know, I've got a HIPAA side, I may have education side, may have FSMA to have to contend with, and having some quick getting started examples would be key.
Yeah, you can, so the TechNet article that Jack pulled up in his portion, that'll show you our actual XML for all of our sensitive types. So you can use those as patterns. You can also go into your tenant, export our rule pack, and you can see the full thing right there.
But I think that's a great idea to think about having more of a community-driven effort where you can share some of this information more readily.
Right.
That's something we'll take that into consideration.
Okay, thanks.
You took my question. Yeah, it's like trying to find, is there a way, you know, like, you know, to the other people's work, because we looked at the HIPAA rule and it looks for two different data things, and, you know, when we compare that to Symantec, we compare that to Trend, it's like really lacking. So we're like, I know someone has to have tripped over this before, even though there's different medical records.
Yeah, so I mean, as we talked about it, we're making investments into better detections for HIPAA, and some of the grouping things is new capabilities we're adding in the classification engine to allow us to write more complex rules, which are very common in the HIPAA space, to actually help close some of that gap based on customer feedback in the end.
Yes, sir.
Roadmap question. Any plans to supplement or replace the manual customization of the XML with a wizard-driven customizing?
Yeah, so we have made a bunch of investments that direction. They're not to a point where we are quite ready to show them here.
Against XML, by the way.
What's that?
I have nothing against XML.
None of us do, but we're trying to build a wizard-like experience that's much easier to use, makes this more accessible to people, and you know, just simpler to deal with.
I mean, you can see some of our grouping investments, which is again expanding what you can do in the UI. That's mm-hmm. the start of that roadmap. But you know, what you're talking about is very much something we want to get to. It's just a matter of resources where we apply them, and you know. This is more of a speed bump for most folks, but it's not a blocker, so we've been focusing on other areas where there isn't as many solutions available.
Totally. Thank you.
Two things. One, is there a way to prevent rules from wildcarding automatically?
Sorry, can you say that again?
So if I create a rule that says if you're this specific person, this specific project, and you're sending this kind of information, you can send it here, here, and here, but not here, 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 based
okay.
on domain name, automatically any domain name you put in there is automatically a wildcard.
Yeah, so that ability exists in Exchange today. We don't quite have that yet in unified policy. That's on our roadmap of things to do. It just hasn't quite gotten there yet, not quite finished, but we do plan on investing in that direction.
Okay, that'd be good, because I've, as of yesterday, 45 internal subdomains, all of which may or may not be able to talk to each other.
Was it you that came up and talked to me at the booth about
no.
this?
No.
Okay.
Might have been my colleague, though.
It could have been.
We run call centers, so 150 okay. projects, different clients. It's a
yeah,
thing.
I may have talked to your colleague about that.
So then have you seen a issue where you have too many DLP policies that start having negative impact on your own tenant in the environment or start getting throttled by Microsoft? Because if I run like a report on SMTP, eventually I start getting throttled because of the number of connections I'm making. Is there an issue with DLP rules in that same space?
We haven't run into that yet. We've seen people create a pretty significant number of rules. Have not seen any degradation of service to that point. We don't actually throttle you based on the number of rules you have.
Because I'm at 100 rules now, and I'm about a quarter of the way through my migration process.
That's a lot of rules. I mean, the way we optimize things is we actually will scan the content only once, even though if you have one or 100 rules, because that's the expensive part of actually doing the text extraction and scanning. So we've optimized that to do that only once and apply all of those and then use the results across the rules. It's a little bit complicated, but much more efficient. But you know, there are timeouts in the system that if your complexity reaches a certain level, you can start hitting. And timeouts you can control two ways. You can either, the message will you actually have some controls, especially in transport rules, to say what happens when a timeout occurs, either let that message go through or actually defer it and try it again because maybe there's a system contention for resources, and deferring it a couple times will allow, you know, a spot where there's less contention for you to actually execute.
Yeah, in 99% of our cases, if you trigger on a rule, I block your message.
Yep.
And then most of those are set up that you don't process to defer.
Yep.
But that leads me to another question. Right now, your scan policy is at 1 meg-ish, I think.
Yep.
Is there any way to change that?
So you could actually.
To be honest, 1 meg is pretty small.
So you could work with support. We actually have done this through an exception process and increased those. We look at what the volume is of content, et cetera, to actually be able to do that. And we've worked also on upping that. We actually started off at 150K. Initially, we were kind of testing of, you know, just understanding the scale and the things we do where we scan, you know, billions of messages on a monthly basis. But obviously gotten comfortable to go to a meg, which is quite a big jump. So we're continuously looking at how to make that bigger. But if you work with your support organizations, there is exception processes to actually raise this on a per tenant level.
Yeah, anything over a meg, my security team has to review, and they get mad at me.
Thank you.
All right, let's go over to this other mic.
Couple questions. First question, the custom sensitive information types coming to SharePoint Online and OneDrive for Business, is that by the end of the year? What is that timing?
Someone asked that just a minute ago. So we're building that capability. It is done, and it will be rolling out over the next couple of weeks. It takes a couple weeks to show up in people's tenants, but I would expect in the first couple weeks of October you should see it if you're in the preview program. We'll be rolling that out to all customers later this year. If you're not in the preview program, come chat with us, and we can get you into it.
In the timing of the dictionaries and what you're showing on the left-hand side, is that also in that same timeline?
So that'll come a little bit separately. It'll come into the same preview program, but it's coming in on the heels of the custom sensitive type capability.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Yes, sir.
Talking about SharePoint, what about hybrid? Is this going to work in a hybrid environment, assuming that the search is in the cloud?
That's a good question. So if you have configured hybrid search, I'd have to actually get back to you because it should work, but I don't know 100%.
Truthfully, I don't even care about the email. Yeah. I care about scanning the SharePoint.
Yeah, just come out SharePoint. So this is about hybrid search where you actually have search configured in a way that your search actually is at, in the cloud, even though it's for on-prem. If you reach out to us, we can get back to you with a definitive answer.
Okay.
And last question.
Right now, in Exchange DLP, you have separate policies for Exchange versus the SharePoint ones. I've noticed that the Exchange side, there's a lot more actions that you can do. When you bring together the unified level, will you be having the same type of actions available for the SharePoint and OneDrive space?
You want to take that one, Jeff?
Sure. So we will continue to increase them because we actually plan to migrate customers and sunset eventually the Exchange capabilities and only have the unified.
So there be
so
a,
we
like
will
a
migrate them. You know, what you will see is the unified platform keep getting better and more investments in it, but it's not necessarily all of them. So depending which ones you use, they may come sooner or later.
Is there any sort of timeline for when that would be?
So probably the first thing that will come is actually adding conditions based on from member of a group or from individuals. So the first set of conditions that are being introduced. If you have specific needs, we'd love to hear from you to kind of help put it into our prioritized
capabilities. I think one of our concerns is if you're, like in the Exchange space, if you're sending messages, right, you can force encryption. In the SharePoint space, if somebody is accessing it from another device, can you?
Yeah, so encryption is a number we've heard a lot, and we're working, this is a longer term item because we're working with the SharePoint team to actually properly do this within the context of SharePoint so that things like OneDrive downloads and stuff work correctly. So it's on our roadmap and something that we're definitely working on, but it is a longer item just because of how deeply this needs to be integrated within SharePoint.
Right.
But it is definitely coming.
For our organization, we have a mandate that if we're sharing certain data outside of the organization, it must be encrypted.
Yep.
That's one of the questions that we have.
I totally understand the requirement, and we hear it pretty frequently. It's more of a timing issue of working with the team and making sure that what we do in SharePoint works well within the SharePoint infrastructure, especially thinking of sync and et cetera.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, folks. If you have any other specific questions, feel free to come up and chat with us. Thank you very much.